Good morning, listeners, and welcome to this week's Ag Report. I'm Jim Finn. Later on in the programme, I will be talking to Amy McKeever from the Irish Farmers Journal, when we will be covering subjects like young farmers telling their stories, buying online, retrofitting your house, and alternatives to higher education. And finally, this morning, I will be talking to Pat Farrell, who is the Animal Health Committee Chair with the IFA. My first guest this morning is Matthew Ryan, and Matthew is with Chagas in Thurles, and he's with me this morning to talk about the wintering feeding of beef animals, so your livestock that you have in during the winter period. Good morning, Matthew, and thank you ever so much for joining us this morning.
No bother, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
So, Matthew, firstly, what tips and advice have you for our listeners this morning in relation to winter feeding management for, we'd say, a spring calving suckler cow?
Okay, so first things first, Jim, when we talk about the management of a suckler cow, we need to get a handle on what the body condition of the cow is first.
Right.
You know, we need to know what sort of condition each cow is in and manage them accordingly in terms of the appropriate nutrition. So if you've a good lot of shed space for these animals, you may be fortunate enough to split them into groups according to their body condition score, but you know, not all farms have this option. You know, if we take a spring calving suckler cow, ideally we want them around a 3,000 in terms of body condition score and calving down at around 2,500 in the spring. Now, if you time the next few weeks, it'd be no harm to take note of each cow's condition and monitor their progress. You know, jot it down in a piece of paper, keep it safe. It's a very, very useful job to do because we want to make sure these cows are fit, not fat. We don't want any calving issues in the spring or metabolic issues in the spring due to cows being overconditioned. It causes a lot of problems. If your listeners are in the scenario that a few cows or the herd is that little bit overconditioned, then what can they do? So if they're over the 3 at the start of winter, you want to maintain or restrict feed just a little. You know, the feed options here for like a well-conditioned cow would be to feed at lower DMD, but it has to be well-preserved silage. So you're talking like a 65 DMD silage, for example, you know, your early June kind of type silage that's a little bit headed out. So the other option then, you know, they could dilute the silage a little bit with straw, which works well, but it can be labor-intensive and difficult if you don't have the machinery, the help or the space. Another option, again, would be to, you know, restrict silage in order to reduce condition on these cows. It works well, but it comes with a big caution because it takes a little bit of planning and a little bit of know-how because, you know, you're restricting cows' intake and you want to ensure they have enough of feed space for, you know, when they all eat together that they can all be fed together. And I can't emphasize enough how important this is. It's critical if you're considering restricting feed. Let's run the scenario, you know, if your listeners have a few suckler cows that may be a little too thin, you know, what can they do? So we're talking of a body condition score here of about 2.5 or lower at housing. So we're talking feeding these cows, if we can, a good quality average silage, 70 DMD ad lib. So typically the silage is cut around, you know, the end of May. It's not completely headed out. So that generally will do the trick. You probably would give them 1 to 2 kilos of meal, possibly if the silage is dipping below, you know, 68 or 65 DMD. And then we like to monitor their progress every few weeks in terms of condition. You know, once the condition's back on track and they're on weight, you know, we revert back to the maintenance diet, you know. And don't forget, for those type of cows, minerals is key. So we feed them minerals 4 to 6 weeks out pre-calving.
Okay, Matthew, some of my listeners would have autumn calving sucklers. Is the nutritional advice much different from the type of cow you're just after talking about, the spring calving cow?
Yeah, okay. So typically, Jim, for an autumn calving cow, we want body condition score about 2.5 to 3 at housing and calving down around 3. So it's slightly different to the spring calving cow in terms of targets, just a small bit. Like the principle is much the same, but it does naturally involve a bit of tweaking because the animal's energy requirements with a calf and foot is a lot higher, and they recover after calving, produce milk and become fertile again, which is a big challenge indoors. If you look at the feed requirements for an autumn calving cow, it will take a 72 DMD silage and a cow in good condition around a 3. You're going to probably feed them about 1.8 kilos of meal before breeding and then drop it down to 0.3 after breeding. If that was a 66 DMD silage, it's probably going to be 2.5 kilos a meal. And then after breeding, they're probably going to be on 1.5 kilos because of the quality difference. Now, that's based on a cow that's about 600 kilos, milking about 8 kilos a day. But you change the concentrate allowance by 0.5 kilo for every kilo change in estimated milk yield. Now, for people that want to know where that is, just check your genetic profile of the cow or the herd, and that'll tell you. And remember, like, these cows are negative energy balance, or if they're negative energy balance, they'll show poor signs of heat. You know, they have shorter heat. They don't go on calf as easy if they're negative energy balance. You know, anestrous cows is oftentimes the biggest challenge, you know, in an autumn calving herd. And typically here, like, a good all-around 16% nut, dependent on the silage quality, will most often suit.
Then coming to weanlings, and you have them for the first winter, what are the key things needed to be mindful of when it comes to their nutrition, Matthew?
Okay, so look, Jim, if it's weanlings or stores or finishing cattle, you know, access to a good set of weighing scales and silage test results are fundamental to the whole thing. So the scales helps establish the base weight to work from to see if what you're doing in terms of nutrition is actually working in terms of weight gain. And if you're chasing efficiency, you know, this is a must. What is a typical goal for a weanling in the first winter is firstly to house them at the right weight naturally. And if they're at the right weight, then tick them over nicely for the first winter. You know, that's often the goal, to try and grow the frame, to aim for that moderate growth rate. And you know, you're talking the 0.5, 0.6 kilo per day. Because, you know, what we're trying to do here is minimize the cost in order to help exploit the cheaper compensatory growth in the spring at grass. You know, a lot of the time that is the farmer's objective. Some people may be, you know, in a situation where they need that higher average daily live weight gain during the winter because they're planning on selling straight out of the shed at the end of the winter. So they might feed to try and get that slightly heavier average daily live weight gains. You know, I suppose each to their own on that one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when it comes to, you know, the basics of nutrition here in terms of supplementation rates, it doesn't really change that much because it's always dictated by the silage quality. So test your silage. That's absolutely fundamental, because if we have a 72 DMD high quality silage versus a 68 DMD silage, you know, with a 72 DMD silage, we're talking roughly 1 kilo per head per day. And with a 68 DMD silage for the continental steers, or, you know, you're talking roughly 2 kilos per head per day. And if that's over a 150-day winter, you're going to naturally front load it. So you're talking 300 versus 150 kilos a meal. So just half the meal being fed to those weanlings on the higher quality silage. It works out roughly about 45-50 euros difference in the meal cost per head. And if you had roughly 50 weanlings there over 150 days, with that difference, you're looking at about $2,500 difference in feed costs. You know, the concentrate should be high in energy. We're talking roughly 0.94 of a UFL in terms of including minerals, and ranging from roughly 14 to 16% crude protein. But that depends on the silage protein levels. And then the usual, you know, check the water troughs, get your stock up, make sure they're all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. And just don't underestimate the importance of fresh, clean water. You know, water is part of the nutrition. And if this is wrong, then the whole thing just falls apart.
Okay. And Matthew, then, finally, if we're looking at finishing cattle, what is the key nutritional advice you have for our listeners who may be finishing cattle this winter?
Yeah. Jim, this is, I suppose, a little bit of a step up. You know, like your weanlings and your stores are kind of much the same. One thing with the stores, if they're on target coming into the winter, if you've good quality silage, they generally will take over fine on little to no supplement. When you're finishing cattle, you know, it's a different game altogether. So we're stepping up our management. As a lot of your listeners know, you know, it's not really possible to finish an animal off grass silage alone. So supplement is needed in some shape or form. But, the basics haven't changed here, you know, in terms of silage quality, but we need top class silage here. You know, there should be no compromise in silage quality at all at this stage. Realistically, we don't want to be using silage less than a 72, 73 DMD, but we should be aiming, if we can, for like a 74, 75 DMD, kind of mid-May, very leafy, no stem type of silage. You know, because once you drop kind of below a 70 DMD silage, it comes to that stage where you need to possibly maybe consider and have a discussion about changing the system that you're using, you know, possibly looking at an ad lib system. Like, if we compare, I suppose, a 74 DMD silage versus a 66 DMD silage to try and get that kilo per head per day average daily live weight gain. Like, we're talking for a 66 DMD silage supplementing roughly 7 kilos a meal, and for a 74 DMD silage you're going to be supplementing roughly 4 kilos a meal. Now, if you look at the difference there, that's roughly going to be about 300 kilos a meal, and depending on what meal price you use, so roughly we're talking 330. Now, that's going to vary depending on what way the things go, but you're talking roughly there a difference of 98 euros a head over the finishing period. So for 50 cattle, comparing a 66 versus a 74 DMD, you're talking about 4,900 euros of a difference. And for 70 cattle, you're talking about 8,000, roughly 800 euros of a difference in meal cost alone when you compare the two different types of silage. So that's why the quality is key.
Matthew, I'm going to have to stop you there now. I'm out of time. So have you any one key other factor that you would like to factor in before?
No, just keep it simple, Jim. You know, yeah. If you get time, weigh your cattle and test your silage and make sure you talk to your advisor or your local merchant, and they'll always be glad to point you in the right direction.
Okay. Well, look at Matthew. Thank you ever so much for joining us this morning. That listener is with Matthew Ryan, who is with Chagas in Thurles. Listeners, my next guest this morning is Amy McKeever. And Amy, as you probably know, is the editor of the Country Living section with the Irish Farmers Journal. And this week's journal is full of information, good information for anybody who wants to do at least four things. We're going to cover four things this morning. And we're going to start off with the young people. Good morning, Amy, and thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Good to have a chat with you. We haven't caught up. This virus is keeping us well apart these days.
Unfortunately. Yeah. And no improvement.
And no improvement. No, unfortunately, is right. Okay, let's start off with young farmers. In the journal this week, you have the supplement or the piece that you often have on that young farmers contribute to. So we'll start off with that, okay?
We're delighted again, Jim. We have to align with the toy show, The Sun, on Friday night. We have IFJ Junior in the paper again this week. So this is, you know, I mean, there was a demand for this from young farmers who wanted their own section of the paper. I think that's one of the good things about the journal, that there is something for all of our 321,000 readers every week. But we probably had a gap in terms of this age group of young farmers. I think we can really see that the importance of bringing that next generation on. But also there is probably a knowledge gap in terms of kids in schools talking to their friends about agriculture. And the IFJ Junior provides something that they can bring into school to show to their friends that might not be from a farming background about what goes on a farm. I think this is the best one we've done so far, because the young readers are really starting to engage with it. They're sending in, and, you know, probably with a little bit of help from parents, but they're beginning to really send in their own opinions, right from the editorial. We have two young men from Castle Island, County Kerry, who were talking about their future in agriculture and how important that is to them. It follows the same format as the paper itself. And we have, you know, dairy, we have beef, machinery, we have pigs in this time, and bees. And those articles, a lot of those articles are written by the young people themselves. I suppose that's really what we're looking for, to continue this on as well. We want to knock some of our more familiar journalists off their regular pages to get some young people in to write these stories. So I'm calling on any young people, if they think they know more about sheep than Darren Carty or cows than Aidan Brennan, to get in contact with us and put the challenge into our journalists.
Yeah, I particularly liked the piece you mentioned on the bees.
On the bees. Mm. That was submitted by that young farmer himself, Alex, yeah. sent in that piece. It only required minor editing, and I thought it was a brilliant piece, and just shows the interest that people have in different elements of agriculture as well. A lot of learning for anybody, young and old, in that we might know as much about bees as as well. We certainly don't know as much about bees as Alex knows about bees, but I think that would be good education for everybody.
It could. And of course, there is such an emphasis nowadays, whether it's coming from environmentalists or whether it's coming from the local authority. And that is, you know, the emphasis is on our pollinators. So the bees was very topical.
Absolutely. And, you know, you have a piece there from Andy on germination and, you know, kind of how our agricultural system works. And, you know, it's been all of the elements and the biodiversity that plays into that. But I think that's really coming across the entire paper as well, the importance of biodiversity. You see it in the main paper, across Junior, across Irish Country Living. And I think that's very positive. And young people really contribute to that as well, because they'll have views on that.
Yeah, and the good thing about young people, and I suppose the biggest change in education of young people since I was educated at national school, is that there's an awful lot of practical work being done in national schools now. It isn't just the 3 hours anymore.
Oh, 100%. And I think AgriWare do a good job in primary schools. There probably isn't as much for that slightly older age group, which I think is where Junior really comes into its own. Like, I'll give you an example of, you know, I went out to interview the young pig farmers that are in this, and that since the last Junior, they have started getting into building model farms, because we featured two young men that were building model farms. And I went down into the basement of the Moore's house, and they, oh my God, what they have created is only unbelievable. We have a little video of what they've done, and they've made these little videos. And it just goes to show, you know, how industrious and how innovative kids are. You know, you give them something to do, particularly in relation to farming, and they'll just go at it. And there's a lot we can all learn a lot from kids.
Okay, that's IFJ Junior. Now let's move on to, I suppose, buying on the internet last Friday or yesterday. Really, it was Black Friday, and a lot of people went out buying, but the pearls are there, whether it's Black Friday or Blue Tuesday. It's the same thing. So what advice are you giving in the journal this week to people who are going to buy online, Amy?
So Kira's done 2 weeks on this, and Margaret often addresses it in Money Mentor as well. You know, a lot of our lives now are lived online, and I don't think anybody has managed to escape from, you know, spam calls that we're getting, text messages that we're getting. You know, because so much stuff has moved online, we need to be so careful about how we trade online. And yet, through the pandemic, we haven't had that much option. And this Christmas, a lot of money will be spent online. There was research there from AIB about how much money was spent on Black Friday in 2020. And I'm sure the same would have been spent this year as well, if not more. And then 24% of Irish consumers did their online shopping. And this jumped up to 31% by 2019, and we definitely think it's going to be higher again. But we do need to be careful. And Kira, our consumer editor here, has given some really good advice over the last 2 weeks. So shop local, shop Irish, shop Europe. Brexit has caused some issues. I don't know if, you know what I mean, how many of your listeners might have bought something from the UK, but I know that I've been charged customs on bits and pieces that I thought I was paying full price for. And you have to be, and a lot of websites will say, but you need to read that fine print as well, or else, you know, your delivery will not only be delayed because Post will have to collect that money, you know what I mean, it's an extra charge that you mightn't have budgeted for. Checking the address on a website, because like a lot of websites will try to come across as a reputable website, whereas they might not actually be all that reputable. And just because it's a .ie doesn't necessarily mean it's an Irish website. You know what I mean? You can set up a domain name as a .ie and it mightn't be Irish. So I suppose just doing a little bit of due diligence, checking the website, looking out for small things like typographical errors. You know, they are kind of a giveaway that the website might not be completely secure. And then, you know, the security of payment as well. You know what I mean? How you make sure to use a secure payment, like PayPal, credit card. You do need to be careful. Nakira's going through, I suppose, in the article, a couple of ways that you can check to make sure that a website's paying is secure. And, you know, we're coming into the time of year now where certain toys will become a fad, probably after the toy show. There's something out there now that every child in the country wants. And the chances are that those will have sold out. There is a little bit of pressure on bringing in stuff this year between COVID and Brexit. And I suppose if something is sold out and you see it being advertised on a website cheap, I'd be very cautious of that. You know what I mean? It, like the old saying, you know, it could be too good to be true. So, you know, kind of watch out for those kind of bargains that turn out not to be bargains at all. It's better to wait and get the actual real item you want to purchase than to end up with somebody very disappointed on Christmas Day.
I suppose we should say that people should use the credit card or PayPal rather than their Visa debit.
It depends. Yeah, I suppose it depends on what way, mm-hmm. on you know what I mean? Kind of, yeah, purchasing online, potential scammers, they can get hold of your, you know what I mean? They can't get hold of your bank account details unless you give them access to it. So, but I would say that any extra layers of protection that you can put in to distance yourself, so, you know what I mean? That, and there'll be insurance on certain things as well. But checking the website and checking the is very, very important. And just doing a bit of research if you have any suspect about the website.
Thanks for that, Amy. That's been very useful information. Listeners, I've got to take a short break, but don't go away, because Amy is staying with me and we're going to be talking about retrofitting your home and about the alternatives to higher education. You're welcome back, listeners, after that short break. Amy McKeever is still with me and we are now going to talk about retrofitting your home. Amy, retrofitting your house. It's something a lot of people will be thinking of. It's something, I suppose, that depending on the age of the person or the family or the unit, you know, whether it is going to be of value to them or not. So the article this week is very well laid out and gives plenty of information. So would you talk a little bit about that, Amy, please?
So the Climate Action Plan is in place, and you know, obviously, you know, we've spoken a lot about how that will impact on farmers. But the Climate Action Plan will actually impact on all consumers. Everybody in the country that buys anything, that heats their house, that eats, will be impacted. And there's going to be costs. But there are lots of things that people can do. And one of the ones, I suppose, that the government is putting a lot of emphasis on is retrofitting of houses. That retrofit, what does that mean? That basically means that you are upgrading the energy performance of your home, making your home more airtight so that you're using less energy to produce, less energy to heat it. And, you know, ultimately the knock-on effects then is that you'd be using less solid fuel, less fossil fuel. So the plan is that emissions from our homes must reduce considerably by 2030. And the government is going to grant aid houses to put in measures. So I met with Sean Finn from Electric Ireland Superhomes, and they're providing kind of an all-in-one system that they'll come in, they'll look at your house, they'll make the recommendations, and they'll organise the work for you, which is the way the government would like this to happen. Now, Sean actually worked for the Tipperary Energy Agency, which has turned into Electric Ireland Superhomes. So it's actually down in Tipperary where a lot of this work had got going quite a long time ago. So they know what they're talking about, and I found this very interesting to have this conversation with Sean about what we could do in our house. And this has actually encouraged us then to look into this in a lot more detail, because there was no way we could fit everything that people would be interested in into this article. And for instance, like my house, actually, I won't get a grant, which, you know, when I got my report back from Sean, I was, you know, so I don't get any grant at all. So how am I going to be? How is, like, why would I, you know, make these big investments when there's no granted? So I want to understand, like, one of the things Sean said was that, you know, if you put in these measures, your electricity bills, your heating bills, they'll go down. So like to understand, you know what I mean, well, what can I do and how much will my energy bill decrease? Who will get these grants? Who, like, you kind of, what would be the most effective things? Like my house, our house is the reason we don't get a grant is the house is just not old enough. It's a new build, and the energy rating is relatively high in it for that reason. Because you build a new house, you have to build it to the specifications as outlined. So at the moment, if you're building a house, it has to reach an A2 energy rating anyway, building energy rating, a BER. So it's really older homes, and that is really what makes up the bulk of our building stock in rural Ireland. So this will be an impact on people living in rural Ireland and moving over to new heating systems, particularly when people have been using a fossil fuel system, gas or oil, like, you know what I mean, for generations at this point in time. There is a lack of understanding about what these new systems are. So we're starting this series from this week, and we'll be building on it every week for as long as we need to, until readers' questions are answered. And if people wanted to get in contact with their queries, you know, we'd love to hear from people. They can either email me or get in contact with any of the team, or we have a link, ifj.ie/rural-climate, for anybody who wants to give us their views. We'd love to hear from businesses. We'd love to hear from people that have done a retrofit, and how has that changed their the price of their energy and heat in their home. But we'll be delving into all of this over the coming weeks, so keep an eye on the paper.
Amy, before we go away from the top, from that particular topic, which is very important, you know, to reach the targets for 2030, would you just give out that email address again?
So my email address is amckeever@farmersjournal.ie, or you can get in touch with us at www.ifj.ie/rural-climate.
Okay, so that's retrofitting our houses. And finally, this morning, let's talk about the alternatives to higher education. Not everybody can, aspire or have the qualifications to get to one of our universities or institutes of technology. So there are avenues for a very good career. There are alternatives.
Well, one of the things that I said to Sean, because I was trying to get a bit of work done in terms of putting up some doors to in the house to try to keep heat in certain areas. That was my first effort, but I couldn't get a carpenter. It's very difficult to get tradespeople in certain parts of the country. And I did ask Sean about that, and he said that there's going to be a massive drive towards getting more people into our apprenticeships programs. And it was what the CAO have done is as an attempt to showcase the opportunities that can be that for careers through the alternative approaches to third level education. They have put apprenticeships and PLC courses into the CAO, so that when somebody goes into the CAO and they're looking at, I want to do this degree course, that they can see beside that, well, actually, there's an alternative that I could do an apprenticeship in that. And there's 62 different career options available through apprenticeships, and they span levels 5 to 10. So that's the same as like a level 10 is a PhD. So it goes from your level 5 right up, exactly the same as a third level education. It's just a different path. And I think that probably we moved a little bit away from apprenticeships, that maybe there was a perception that people had to have a third level degree, whereas, you know, we really need to change that perception, because there's really, really great opportunities through the apprenticeships route. And I think that this is a really positive thing that the CAO have done. Now, you know, you can't actually apply through the CAO for apprenticeships, but all the information is there, and I'd encourage people, you know, use over the, you know, people that might be thinking about applying for the CAO, whether as mature students or as school going people, to start giving this some thought well in advance of when you actually need to make a decision, because there is so many options for people. And to be honest, there's a lot of opportunities coming up for people as well in the apprenticeships area.
You introduced it by saying, when you were talking about the retrofitting, and of course this retrofitting is going to need very highly skilled people to do the various bits to our houses, whether that's, as you said, hanging doors, or whether it is a rejigging the plumbing, or fitting underfloor heating or whatever,
yep.
Or for that matter, solar panels, or a solar panel to help to give you hot water. They're going to need the expertise to put those in.
Oh, 100%. You know what I mean? For 500,000 homes that they want to retrofit by 2030. Like nobody is unfamiliar with the difficulty we have in relation to housing in this country. You know what I mean? Just building houses. And to think about to add on the retrofitting on top of that now to houses that are already built, it's an incredible amount of work that needs to be done. And I suppose on that topic, like that's going to put pressure as well on the agricultural industry. Like we have the agri-jobs focus in the main paper this week. And that is one of the things that was flagged up when we were doing the interviews and putting that together. That, you know, like kind of we're heading into a period now where there are going to be a lot of jobs. It is very much an employees market. There's a lot of jobs out there and the agricultural industry really needs to step up its game. The working environment has completely changed in terms of what people value, having spent a year and a half, you know, a lot of people working out of their homes. And, you know, employers probably need to have a think about that and look at ways that they can retain talent. Like one of the interviews I did highlighted the fact that, you know, kind of workers, operatives in the agricultural industry can get very good jobs now back in construction again. And we all know, like, there's been the pressure that put on during the Celtic Tiger. But the other companies, pharmacy, medtech, any of the technology companies, they're all looking for people as well. And they're in a space to provide very good terms and conditions. And this is something that the agri-food industry is going to be challenged by in the coming years.
Okay, well, look at Amy, we're going to have to leave it there. But before we go, I would say to my listeners, if you want to know more in depth and read more about what we have spoken about this morning, why not go out and buy this week's Irish Farmers Journal? It's a wonderful read. And if you only go as far as the country living section, which Amy is responsible for, well, then you'll still have got really good value for money. But why not read the rest of the paper as well?
Thank you very much, Jim.
That, listeners, was Amy McKeever, who is the editor of the Country Living section with the Irish Farmers Journal. Listeners, my next guest this morning is Pat Farrell. And Pat is the chair of the IFA's Animal Health Committee. I don't know whether you're aware, but during the week, last Monday, as it so happens, the Minister for Agriculture launched an app looking at the movements of the badger, which, of course, is often blamed and maybe mostly blamed for the spread of TB. And we have to eliminate tuberculosis from our herds. This is a scheme that has been going on since before I was a young fella, and that wasn't yesterday. And we still haven't been able to eradicate TB completely. And Pat's going to be with me to talk about this app. Good morning, Pat, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, and thanks for having me on.
Okay, good to have you. Pat, let's talk about the app first. I believe, and I'm looking at the press release from the department, that all the farming organisations were involved in implementation committee that were responsible for this app.
Yeah, at the implementation group meeting, we looked for more finance for the wildlife programme, and the minister secured an extra million in the budget 22. So as part of that, the department have set up this app for badgers. Now, they have mapping of sets as well, and they're finding sets the whole time. So if people know they have sets on their land and the department don't know, they should notify the department about them, because they're only too glad to know if there's extra sets. And we've also looked for extra work to be done ahead of infrastructure for motorways, and where there'll be badger disturbance, that they go and locate the badgers in advance of that, because we've seen down through the years where there's been outbreaks of TB that's been linked to disturbance. So it's important that people would, if they know they have a badger set on their land and the department aren't aware of it, it will be important that they let the department know, because it may not be affecting you and your cattle, but somebody else's cattle could be affected by it.
Right. Now, this app is primarily to map the badger's activity. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I'm not really up to speed with how the app works. But I know the department launched it there last week or earlier on in the week. So they're anxious to deal with the wildlife programme as well.
Right, because I know in the little bit I read about it, Pat, and it's this, you know, they're asking farmers to walk their land when they get to put this app on their phone, to walk the land and log any badger activity that they would see.
Yeah, and sure, most people have a contact in the department or would know a contact. So if people aren't familiar with the app and not able to use it, it's easy to contact the department and tell somebody anyway.
Right.
Because not everyone would be savvy with the app.
Right. Okay. And also, of course, with this particular app, they also have a booklet that you can download on the department one of the department websites, and they also have a information video. So, you know, they really have produced a really good piece of software to help farmers to identify where badger sets are on their farm.
Yeah, and I suppose they are being proactive, and we've seen in the 1990s where when the East Offaly Badger, the project started there, where they started capturing badgers, at that stage we had a lot more reactors than we have now. So it did work in the intervening years, but we seem to be at a crossroads now that we can't eliminate the final piece of the TBE from the country. And you were saying you were only a young lad when my mother, she's in her 80s now, and she remembers when it came in. And what they were told at that time was, sure, they'd have the TBE got rid of in a few years. And she's 88 now, so it's still not got rid of, and she probably won't see got rid of, and I don't know if I will either, but hopefully I will see a reduction in it anyway.
Hopefully we all will, and hopefully all we can do, I suppose, this morning, yourself and myself, Pat, is to ask farmers to download the app and to go on to the website, which is www.bovinetb.ie. and learn more about it, because it is in all our interest that farmers would get this app and try to eliminate TB. They may not get it, but their poor neighbour up the road might get it, or somebody down the road from them might get it. So it is an important thing to eliminate TB once and for all. Let's look then at TB nationally. You know, what's the national situation at the moment from an IFA point of view and also from an animal health point of view?
Well, sure. Nationally, the TB has been stagnant for the last 4 or 5 years. This year is the first year that it has started to drop, and they've seen a small decrease in it. So I suppose it's too early to say whether that's going to continue, but hopefully it will. But nationally, the TB programme, farmers spend $34 million a year directly into the programme. That's made up of $27 million through annual testing and $7 million through disease levies. And that doesn't take account of farmers' labour. And Grant Thornton did a report earlier on in the year for the TEB Forum. And it was the first time we got farmers' labour recognised. Now, there's a dispute as to the amount, the figure, but in IFA we say nationally that that's roughly about $20 million for farmers' labour and loss of production and all that's associated with having the test, because we all know a TB test is not just a one-day affair. You're gathering cattle maybe a day before, or you're doing extra work the day before or the day after. So it's a weekly job by the time you have the first done and then the reading. And then there's always the downside. Am I going to go down with TB? And there's that fear.
Of course. And if you look then across the whole country with regard, that's just one of the animal health issues. But there are other animal health issues out there as well that come under your brief with the IFA.
Yeah, well, sure. We deal with the BVD program as well. We'll be meeting with Animal Health Ireland on that, and with the ONIS program that they have up and running as well. Those are two that come to mind, all right, that's under our brief. But the BVD, you'd be hoping that it's... I think I'm the third animal health chairman now, and each one thought that they'd see it finished in their time. And none of us have seen it finish. Mm-hmm. So hopefully it'll finish in the next person's time. There's a cost there to farmers. I think it's 8 million a year farmers spend on the sampling.
Mm-hmm.
So if TB was got rid of in the morning and the BVD, there's a big saving there for farmers.
Of course, with regard to the BVD, some farmers haven't got rid of the animals that have tested positive on their farm within the required length of time. And of course, that's having an effect on spreading that disease again.
It is, but that has... that has decreased dramatically from the start of it. I think in 2013, people held on to PI animals and even tried to fatten them up or kept mm-hmm. them maybe for a year and a half. Now the turnaround time is a lot quicker and the amount of animals that are being kept is very small.
Okay, so we can hope that maybe in the next 2 or 3 years that we'll have cracked that particular disease.
Well, hopefully anyway. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, look at Pat, thanks a mil for joining us. And all I can say is to encourage farmers to download the app and to interact with the department, because it's in their own interest that eliminate TB from our national herd. That, listeners, was Pat Farrell, who is the chairperson of the IFA's Animal Health Committee. That, listeners, is AgriPort for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show and that you will join me, Jim Finn, at the same time next week for another AgriPort on Tip FM. Coming up next is the news at 10 o'clock, and after that, Eamon Dwyer presents Down Your Way.